Now, the Ian Jessup Show.
There's always something intriguing going on with provincial politics, and who better to analyze it than our regular guest, Norm Farrell, author of the blog Insights. Norm, how are you doing?
Very good. A little warm, though.
Isn't it?
We're not used to that.
No, absolutely. Norm, you've rebranded your site and now call it Insights rather than Northern Insights. What was the reason for that?
Well, you know, it's kind of like sitting here in the southwest corner of the province to call the blog Northern Insights has always seemed a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
When I started, I thought I would have more of an international point of view, but as it evolved, I've tended to write mostly about British Columbia issues, so I thought it was time to change, and the blog itself over the next short while will be evolving to have a different look and a different web address, but I'll be letting people know the new address.
Well,
the old one.
Okay, yeah, I think it's great. It's not like there isn't anything to write about provincially, is there?
That's correct.
No, Andrew McLeod broke the story in the Tyee late yesterday, at least I believe he did, in which George Abbott, who ran against Christy Clark for the Liberal leadership, is no longer a member of the BC Liberal Party. What did you think of that?
Well, I'm interested by this because I've actually been hearing rumors for a few years that Abbott was a guy who was having a little bit of difficulty in his involvement with the Liberals because some of the things that were being done offended his sense of ethics and propriety. And it didn't surprise me that when he failed in his own leadership bid that he decided to go elsewhere. He didn't go with any statement of dissatisfaction or disaffection for the Liberals, but that, I'm told, was a case that hadn't gone away. I think, though, the crowning act was when he was proposed to head up the Provincial Treaty Commission with respect to First Nations negotiations, and the provincial government stepped in at the very last minute and put an end to that appointment. And it was done in a fashion that really was quite disrespectful to Abbott himself. He probably would have been a decent commissioner. You know, I think the problem with our political system is that good people often are silenced and not allowed to speak because of the, in effect, they're whipped into line.
Sean Holman?
Yeah, did an excellent video last year, I think it was, that gave the history of how party operations work in the legislature. And I think it's not necessarily a pretty sight, and it's individuals who go in there with a high sense of ethics and standards are soon learn that they can't apply those consistently. And I suspect that Abbott is a bit of a victim of that kind of thing. And I think BC politics is a little poorer for the loss of him.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I've said a lot of I've had a lot of criticism of the BC Liberal government, and I would think most of it is deserved. But I think George Abbott was a fine politician. When you look back at his career in provincial politics, he had a number of portfolios, and I can't recall at any time where he really got himself into trouble. And he was, I believe, education minister, and dealt with teachers' disputes. And I'm sure the teachers would argue that he was a bit of a pain in the rear end.
But well, one of the stories that I've heard is that he had problems within his own staff when he was in education. There were some things going on there that were objectionable, and that he was not comfortable with them, and a few other backbenchers as well who knew the stories were uncomfortable. And, you know, so these people may appear to be running their departments, but they have fairly limited power as to what they can do. We've turned into a situation or into a system that relies almost completely on the power of the First Minister's office. So the Premier and her immediate advisors exercise the power, and the rest of them are just there to communicate the decisions to the public.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There used to be a day when Bill Bennett was premier, and even when Dave Barrett was premier as well, where ministers had some responsibility and became spokespeople for their particular portfolio.
And I think Bill Bennett made an issue of holding accountable the ministers, though, to for the management of their department, so that if there was a screw-up, he expected them to take responsibility for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That seems to have gone away largely at this point.
Yeah. Now, Norm, you've posted on your website a graph showing how much money taxpayers used to get from the sale of oil and gas rights in BC and how much we get under Christy Clark's government, the government that has promised us this multi-billion dollar prosperity fund. Now, when I saw the graph for the first time, I thought maybe you'd made a mistake because the numbers are so strikingly different. Now, take us through it.
It is quite amazing, isn't it? And I've pulled the monthly reports of the sales of natural gas rights, actually oil and gas, but oil doesn't bear much, isn't much of a factor in D.C. Anyways, I've got every single monthly sale result since back to 2007, and I began to sort of chart that, and it's really difficult to create a chart that shows just how much the drop-off has been. I finally settled and published one that shows that in the first 6 months of the year prior to Christy Clark becoming premier, the province gained over $600 million in revenues from the sale of oil and gas rights. In the 6 months of the current year, we've had $1.1 million. So you go from 600 and some million, almost $610 million, down to $1.1 million. And this is a province that is claiming that we're going to be debt-free, that we're going to be building a prosperity fund of immense amount. In fact, I think the premier even claimed that she was going to introduce the enabling legislation for the prosperity fund later this month.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an absurdity because we have been suffering at the in the Treasury has been suffering with respect to actual royalties. Partly those are dependent on prices, but we have also been giving out hundreds of millions each year in subsidies for roads and drilling costs and so on, so that our net receipts from royalties has been rather low. Part of the argument that used to be posed to me when I first started writing about the low value of royalties received, people would say to me, oh, but you're ignoring all the money that's coming in by way of land sales. Now, those land sale amounts previously were a factor, but in recent times they've been looking like they're becoming a non-factor. And that's worrisome because I don't know where the revenues are going to come from. They've already changed the rules with respect to LNG so that if any of these facilities actually proceed, we will be recovering rather small sums of money from that, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got no royalty revenue coming in to speak of. We've got no land sale rights sales to speak of. And we will have no LNG revenues to speak of.
But Norm, yeah, We've got lots of public relations.
Oh boy!
Yeah, let's take this phone call from Jack, who's been waiting. Jack, thanks for waiting.
Thank you. On July 13th, the legislature is going to sit to begin to pass the bill that will ratify the, I guess, secret agreement between Christy Clark and Petronas. In the Times columnist, they had an editorial a few weeks ago that said this deal is basically unprecedented in BC history for what Ms. Clark is giving away, because she's essentially promising that there will be no changes to taxes or royalties for the next 25 years without full compensation to Petronas. Do you know anything about this agreement and what is going to be happening?
Well, we don't know an awful lot of detail. We just we hear rumors of things, but there's been very little involvement of the public or of experts outside the province. Now, if you or I were going out to buy a house, we would probably be bringing in some kind of expert in building trades to examine the deal. In fact, our mortgage company would probably require us to have an inspection done. Yet here we are doing about to do a deal that may involve hundreds of millions or billions of dollars of government subsidies to LNG industry, and we're setting a precedent by doing it all behind closed doors and then having a rushed session of the legislature, bringing people back in the summertime to pass a law. Who knows what it will say? But I just published this morning a piece that's actually from the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives. And one of the things that they argue is that the government has been using exaggerated amounts for the actual raw gas reserves that we have. Now, they've been talking about marketable resources instead of talking about proven reserves. And the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives and a number of people that I've talked to in the industry say that the numbers that are being used to justify the plans for LNG are simply wild fantasies. Now, this is important because we know the agreements that the government has been working on are all backloaded in terms of public interest. There's going to be a low rate of tax on the LNG producers in the early years. They're going to be allowed to recover all of their capital costs and so on. And so if there were any substantial funds flowing to government, they would be coming in the back end of a business cycle, perhaps 20, 30 years down the road. But the way some people are projecting these reserves is that there may be no back end because we will have run out of gas well before those higher rates of tax actually kick in.
Mm. Anything else, Jack?
Well, yeah, it seems like this is a betrayal and a sellout by Christy Clark of gargantuan proportions that's going to be happening right here in Victoria starting July 13th. We know nothing about it, and yet it proceeds. It just sounds kind of unfathomable.
You know, there's an absurdity underway right now in that the provincial government has been making a fuss about seeking public consultation about higher penalties for what they call distracted driving.
Yeah.
And so those situations are really, I think they're distractions from the main issue that they want to do.
Good point.
I suspect there will be more distractions introduced in the next little while as well.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, I think they're finally going to start talking about the public inquiry into the healthcare firings that happened 3 years ago at exactly the moment when this Petronas bill is going to go through, and one will cover up the other.
Yes. Thank you, Jack. Appreciate it. Norm, welcome back. Norm Farrell is our guest. He's with us every month. He's the author of the blog Insight. And Norm, just before the break, Jack talked about the firing of the 8 Ministry of Health employees, one of whom committed suicide as a result. There has been talk of a possible public inquiry in this, or the call for a public inquiry. My feeling is that the government will never conduct a public inquiry into this, and they're looking at ways to get around it by possibly having an ombudsperson look into it. Give me your take on the issue.
Well, certainly they've dragged their feet on this continuously. A public inquiry about the firings would be quite unnecessary if they were simply willing to tell the truth, which is why did they act the way they did. My supposition is that they don't want us to know what the reasons were, because it relates to their involvement with the what we call big pharma, the large pharmaceutical companies that are selling into a $25 billion a year market in Canada. And I think there's a lot of indication. We first saw it with the UBC-based Therapeutics Initiative, which was an independent research body that the pharmaceutical industry, tried to have closed down. Now, there was, if you recall, there was a lot of public reaction and response, particularly out of the academic community, said that it was just crazy to shut down that facility that was looking at the efficacy and safety of pharmaceuticals that government was itself spending hundreds of millions of dollars on. And so the Liberals did make an effort to shut down the therapeutics initiative, but they failed at it. But what they did do was substantially cut the funding of the examinations that were underway at therapeutics initiative. So in effect, they crippled it. They couldn't kill it, so they crippled it. Mm-hmm. And the next step that came along was to attack the researchers that were involved at the University of Victoria and the Ministry of Health. And they were involved in some specific things, for example, the anti-smoking drugs that government had promised to fund under PharmaCare. And some of those reports that were underway, we have good reason to believe that they were going to suggest that the drugs that were being covered were not safe. And that, again, was going to cause a huge economic impact to the pharmaceutical industry. And they're big financial supporters of the BC Liberals. So I think what they've done, you have to tie together the therapeutics initiative actions and the health ministry firings. And I think that rope that you tie them together with mm-hmm. goes all the way back to the pharmaceutical industry itself.
Norm, in thinking about, as you were talking, I was wondering, what really gets the public angry anymore? Does this get the public angry? Does the promise of a prosperity fund, a false promise of a $100 billion prosperity fund that isn't going to happen, get people angry anymore? Do people get angry at politics anymore?
It's amazing, isn't it? Pamela Martin, who's, I don't know what she is, an ambassador of goodwill for the Premier, she put out a tweet before the last election inviting people to make suggestions as to how they would spend a $1 trillion prosperity fund. So they didn't stop at small lies. The lies kept growing and growing. And as we know, there's actually no prosperity fund. There's no money. There's no surplus money coming in. And the debt of the province is growing rapidly. So if any money does come in, it's not going to go into a prosperity fund that seeks new places to spend that money. If we do get any new revenues coming into government, it's got to go into paying down debt or eliminating the cuts to some of the important human resource services that we've seen in the last few years.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's one other point that I wanted to cover with respect to natural gas is that we have an excess of natural gas in North America at this point, and that depresses the price and makes it less expensive to heat our homes. But more importantly, it makes it less expensive for manufacturing operations and different service companies and so on to do business. Now, one of the main reasons for exporting natural gas is to take advantage of higher prices overseas. That will have the effect of driving up the domestic prices as well. And so we're going to be losing substantial amounts of employment when we hit our industries and manufacturers with higher energy costs. Think of the sawmills that are already suffering with numerous difficulties, and they use a lot of natural gas in dry kilns, and so if the gas price doubles, we're going to see a lot of industries shutting down, and our homes will be more expensive to heat, and we may gain a few hundred, even a couple of thousands of people working in the natural gas industry, but we will lose similar amounts or perhaps substantially more people who are employed elsewhere in the economy.
Norm, it's a warm day. It's Canada Day, and I appreciate you taking time out to do this. Crack a cool one, and
I'm afraid I'm down to lemonade.
That's
a life where you're not allowed to sin anymore.
That's right. Good to talk to you. Thanks
All
very
right.
much.
Thanks, Ian.
Bye.
Bye.
That's Norm Farrell, the author of the blog Insights, and Norm is with us every month after the 2 o'clock.